Te Moti Karetu of Ngai Tūhoe is famous in Te Ao Māori for his commitment to te reo. He is a kaiako at Te Pane Kiritanga, the Institute of Excellence in Te Reo Māori, which operates under Te Wānanga o Aotearoa. This level of learning and comprehension of the reo is considered the top of the top, other than, of course, with your own kaumātua or at your own marae or other spaces like that. It teaches you to have the utmost command over the language in all areas. My first language was Te Reo Māori, but I am nowhere near that level of proficiency. For those who know Te Moti, they know he is incredibly cheeky and has a very sharp wit. I got to interview him about a book he and Te Whare Huia Milroy, another leading teacher and scholar in Te Reo Meona Tikanga, published this year. When I spoke to him on the phone, I introduced myself in Te Reo and explained I would be conducting the interview in English and asked if that was okay. He jokingly responded, I suppose that's okay. The book is called He Kupu Tuku Iho.
The Kupu Tuku Iho was prompted by students at AUT who posed a lot of questions to me and Dr. Parehuia Milroy about all sorts of issues pertaining to the Māori world, and this book is our response to their questions.
And what sort of questions were they?
About all sorts of issues, about Māori, mana, kawa, language, tradition, haka.
As you can hear, the connection in the interview wasn't great, which means the audio wasn't great. It's an important conversation, however, with someone I consider a rangatira of the reo, so I would still like to play the interview, but I'm going to try talk you through it. So the blurb explaining the book says, the authors discuss key cultural concepts, bracket, including mana, tapu, wairua, whakapapa, ritual, farewell speeches, and Māori humour, unbracket, as well as language and cultural issues of the modern world. With assistance from a team at Te Upukaria, the National Māori Language Institute, who transcribed and edited structured conversations between these two kaumātua, this book preserves the voices and ideas of these two major scholars for present and future generations. And so how did you and Te Whare Huia go about writing it?
We didn't. Our responses were caught by on tape and they were written as we had given them.
Ah, I see.
We didn't sit down and write it on a piece of paper. So all our responses, as they were placed to us by students, they were recorded, and the recording of our responses is what this book is what this book is, yeah.
Mm. Do you think that's a better way of communicating information?
I think so. I think it's a much better way. Because then afterwards you can look at the information you've given to make certain that they've written it down correctly, rather than sort of pondering over pages and pages and pages or whatever.
Mm.
I think it's a much more efficient way of doing this, yeah.
And whose is your intended audience? Is it just for those students, or...?
Our intended audience is for those who have a love of Māori language, who have a good command of the language, and want to extend their knowledge of the language and their knowledge of the culture.
So do you think that you need to get to a certain place with the language before you can kind of delve into these kōrero?
I think that's your point, but I mean, most people, if they've got a good command of the language, they can read this book without much problem. You wouldn't read it from cover to cover. I think you would look at one particular aspect. If you're looking at, say, Māori, and probably give his opinion of Māori, or whether it's about Waiata, then I give my opinions of Waiata, but I don't think you would sit down and read it from cover to cover. I think what you would do is you would go to those elements or to those aspects that you're really interested in, just to see what we thought about that particular issue.
Mm. Or if something came up in your life and you needed to know about something in particular, you'd go to that.
Yeah, assuming that we talked about it, of course. Yeah.
It's not being published in English. What was the reasoning behind that?
That sort of leaves the avenue open for lazy people to sort of read a translation rather than what we said.
And some things can't really be explained in English.
That's true, but also, you know, this is for students, for serious students of the language. There's lots of things in translation, and people read the translation rather than the original text. So this is going to be one of those issues where if you have a love of language, then you read it in the original rather than reading a translation.
Te Moti was explaining that if you have a love of the language, then you read it in the original rather than a translation. The book is not being published in English, and that is almost an encouragement, in my view, for people to gain some proficiency before then delving into these deeper conversations. He also said it was lazy to read a translation. And remember this because he calls me lazy later in the interview. There's lots of, there always is, and there's always conversations about the risk of losing te reo or it dying out. I was at the kura reo at Hwani Waititi in 2015, and I remember Te Wharehuia saying, kei te pari o te rua te reo e tuana. So the reo is really standing at the foot of its grave. What do you think about that?
I've never agreed with that opinion, in the sense that while people continue to speak the language is alive, but I think what's happening is with the generation, probably your generation and the generation immediately above you, are the ones that started doing something seriously about the language, and those coming after you are probably even more serious than you were. So I think it will never be spoken by the Maori population in Toto, because I don't know what's your mother's command like. What has Tamsin Maori still quite good, or she's gotten everything?
So here he has now asked what my mum's reo is like these days. He knows both my mums, one of whom met Timothy at a kura reo back in the day in Waimarama. A kura reo is a wānanga where you go somewhere for a certain amount of days and stay together with other learners of all different levels of proficiency and only speak Māori the entire time. It can be pretty daunting and challenging, but it's also a very, very important learning space. You also make some great friends. Well, it's interesting because that you say that, because she obviously taught in Rumaki reo for years and years, so that her grasp on that was on the reo was great in that time. She was doing it every day, she was immersed in it, and now she doesn't do that. Her reo, you know, we only really engage in the reo when our moko are around and she's speaking Māori to them, so it's, I guess the context is different, and yeah, she'd say her reo is weaker.
Yes, and I probably would agree with her.
Mm.
What about Leonie?
Yeah, no, hers is fairly strong. She operates in lots of spaces where she needs that deal and she uses that deal. And I mean, both of them made that commitment in terms of the kids and the moko being immersed in reo. So, yeah.
I remember Tavon coming to kura reo in my mom. So,
yeah, that's right.
That's 3 years back, many years back.
Mm. But then, so
well, there's people like Tamsin and Leonie and others who never had the language themselves, but were determined to pass it on to their children. And I think that's what's happening with the current generation. And most of the kids coming from Pane Kiriata now are very fluent already, but they're not native speakers. In other words, they didn't grow up with the language, but have acquired it through kura kaupapa universities or whatever. And then they come back, but they have a very high level of command. And our job is just to sort of knock off the rough edges, really.
So my older brothers, they went to kura kaupapa, and now their kids are fluent in Māori and Pākehā.
Yeah. One wonders about the level of command. I have this thing about children who's coming from those who went to kura kaupapa, just what the command is and how wide it is, and what the command of vocabulary is, what the command of structure is, and so on. Well, those issues I worry about, and that's why we sort of look at the kids very critically who come to us, because they're all from some kura kaupapa, picked up all the bad habits at kura kaupapa. And I'm sort of, as I say, knocking them out of that land.
Right. So I guess that is the next step, right? So we do have some kind of command on te reo, like you say, and like me, for example, mine is very basic. I can communicate and I guess I can pronounce correctly, those sorts of things, but I could never kind of operate in a more complex way. I'm always nervous if I'm having a conversation with you or others, that sort of thing.
That's a lot of it, but I think that doesn't have to raise them up to that area where they can indulge in complex language, in elevated language.
This is where he calls me lazy, and it is well deserved, because I insert the words and or so, for example, into my Māori sentences. I'm still thinking Pākehā when I'm speaking in te reo, and that's where schooling in Pane Kiritanga comes in. It shifts that way of thinking.
You know, I find that people, by listening even to you, have been interpolating words into their speech, like and so, and irritating little things that I find happening with the moment of learning. And I think it's just laziness on their part, I'm sorry to say, really. But, you know, that's how it is. Some people sort of... Because they're thinking in English, I think. I've just been given a list of a song to look at very critically. And while the idea is good, but the whole way this song has been structured is very, very popular. But, you know, that's how the whole thing's going to go. That's the thing there,
Yeah, I'm still thinking Pākehā, even though I attempt to. to speak in Te Reo. And I guess that sort of brings me to my other question, because I'm in my context working at a Pākehā radio station, and other news stations have all attempted to incorporate Te Reo. But do you think, like, is this helpful, or is it more of a token gesture?
I think the token gesture is better than a no gesture.
That is, I agree. But do you think this probably won't help change things systematically?
No, but I think it gives the impression to people outside that there is a little bit of caring on the part of that particular radio station.
That they
care. And if you watch the breakfast program, I don't know if you do watch the breakfast program on television.
Cool.
where they use a lot of Maori faces, Jack, whatever his name is, Jack Cain.
Oh, so yes, yeah.
He's also going to classes, and I can tell that's got him a few of his tutors. But, you know, they use the same expressions all the time. They're using them correctly, and I admire that. But they don't go out of sort of very limited sphere. But that indicates to a lot of people in non-Maori out there that, you know, this station cares a little bit about the language and the way it's going. So, Hats off to people like that.
Here he's talking about the way people like Jack Tame use Te Reo on platforms in the media is important to show a commitment to Te Reo, even if it is only at a certain level that is getting stronger with time. One of my questions is also about the you know, and politically or in the government sort of talking about compulsory Te Reo in school. Is that a good thing? Do you think?
Because we have a shortage of teachers. And I would not waste my time if I were a teacher teaching children who are reluctant to learn.
Mm.
Why waste my talents on such children? They exist, I know, even now, but I mean, it would be worth word compulsion. Now, a lot of the younger, strident Maori speakers of the day don't agree with me in that theory of mine.
Mm.
But no, I wouldn't, because, you know, I went to school with maths and science, they're compulsory. And, you know, you do them at the school certificate, and it says you can drop them, you drop them. You know, you pass school certificate in maths and science and never again look at the whole area because you were made to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's true reading. And we were in Ireland last year. Panikita Tech and I went to Ireland last year. The Irish was compulsory for a long time. And they're still struggling with the survival of the virus. So, you know.
Right.
I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is that we plant the desire in people. And if people come with a desire and a hunger, they will do better.
There's strong debate at the moment on whether Te Reo should be compulsory in schools. This is one line of thinking, one of many, where given we don't have enough teachers to teach it and we would be forcing it on people that may not want to learn, that would be more detrimental in the long run. Timothy here uses the example of Ireland, where despite the native language being compulsory for a long time, it hasn't necessarily solved all the problems. I don't think this is to understate the importance of Te Reo in this country. And in terms of the future of that, does that look like, you know, Aotearoa whānui coming to Panikiritanga? Or,
well, Aotearoa whānui will never do it, you see. I mean, you also have the biggest and the rednecks and what have you. You know, they thrive in New Zealand at the moment. But I think the people themselves come with a hunger and a commitment to the language, no matter where they go to learn, when they're going to make it, they will become fluent quite easily. But they need to have a commitment and they need to be committed.
Mm.
And have the hunger. They need the hunger, yeah.
Mm. Ka pai. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the time.
I can't.
And good luck to your radio station.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for your mama. Thank you for your hugi to mama.
Ai, maku e kōrero. Ka pai.
Ka pai. Ka pai.
So his belief is building the desire in people to really want to learn the language. In doing that, with a commitment and hunger for the language, anyone can become fluent. He finished by telling me to send love to my mum. And if I had seen him face to face, there probably would have been a stern but cheeky look on his face to also tell her to get to class and strengthen that deal. Same goes for me, I suppose.